The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to Monday. A lot going on. There's a suspected terror attack in London. It was kind of the reverse. Somebody took a van and mowed into a lot of Muslims as they came out of mosque. Things are starting to heat up. We'll tell you about an idea that I had over the weekend that I think we're going to do tomorrow. I wrote to a lot of people, many of whom will remain nameless, but all leaders that you could respect, and then people like, I don't mind exposing this, Brad Thor, who are in the science fact kind of or fact and fiction sort of world, where they write these fiction books, but they're all really, it's all based in fact. And I asked them, what would we be looking at a week later if a lot of people, if not all of the people, the 30 congressmen and senators, were killed last Tuesday? What would America look like a week later? I'll begin to tell you a little bit about that coming up in just a second. Also, a high school has abandoned their valedictorians because competition is bad. Cosby, mistrial. They couldn't come to a decision. And when you read about it and you see what was presented, I don't know if I could have come to a decision on that. And one other trial that really, to me, is a bit confusing. And confusing because people are saying this person had no liability, no responsibility. It's suicide is the act of the individual. It is. But do we play a role at all in other people's lives? A really dangerous, slippery slope kind of question that we begin with right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm so glad that you're here. Let's start with a story of a girlfriend who, in a case that took in thousands of text messages, Michelle Carter was dating a guy named Conrad Roy III. He was a friend of hers, and I use that in air quotes, and he had said to her for a while, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to kill myself this Friday. She encouraged him through text messages. You should do it.
Initially discouraged him for months and told him not to do it, and then eventually started encouraging him to do it.
Right. I'm going to tell you a very personal story that I've never told before on the air that relates to this in some way as a story of devil's advocate. But she was just convicted of, what was it, third-degree manslaughter?
I thought it was involuntary.
Involuntary manslaughter? Yeah. Okay. Involuntary manslaughter because he got out of the truck. He put himself in the garage, started his truck up, started breathing in the fumes. He stumbles out of the truck, gets out, texts her.
Because he got scared.
Right.
Right? He didn't want to.
He didn't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "What is wrong with you? Get back in the truck." Mm-hmm. And then she never called police, never alerted, nothing.
No, in fact, she actually created a charity softball game, I think, in his memory after his death, she was communicating with friends saying that he was missing before he had actually committed suicide. She's a very disturbed individual. There's no doubt
about that. No, I think she's really disturbed, and she actually, he calls her. And he's choking and coughing, and she actually listens to him die over the phone. She does nothing. So now this case goes to court, and there's a lot of people that say she has no responsibility. Suicide is a personal choice. And it was. It was his choice to listen to her. It was his choice to do it. She didn't start the car. She didn't do any of that. However, you're playing on the mind of somebody who is obviously ill. Don't we have a personal responsibility to help one another, to first do no harm? And that was doing harm.
And it wasn't just that moment. It was weeks and weeks leading up to it. It was things like, you know, your parents will be upset at first, but they'll get over it. It's okay. She texted him, you're finally going to be happy in heaven. No more pain. It's okay to be scared and normal. I mean, you're about to die.
That is so frightening.
She did it over and over and over and over again over a period of weeks, if not months, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, she really went at this.
Right. And if you're a friend...
And they say boyfriend, really, boyfriend, girlfriend. There's at least that was the rumored relationship between them.
I mean, that is sick. That is really sick. This girl has some deep issues.
And we should point out, too, that he had already attempted suicide previously. So it wasn't one of these things where I didn't believe he would even try it. He'd already tried it a couple times.
She couldn't say that because she was listening to him. She listened to him die and did nothing.
She
listened to him die. It was on the phone.
That point where he gets out of the truck and she talks him back into the truck.
It is pretty frightening.
So the argument, and you might say that's open and shut, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think my mind jumped to people like Charlie Manson, who never killed anybody. Charles Manson didn't kill people. He encouraged others to kill people, and they did. And he is in prison forever, right, because of that.
What about the guy... The blue whale guy. If you don't know this, this is terrifying.
It's terrifying.
This is a guy in Russia who is online, and he says, I've got the greatest challenge ever. And anybody who takes me up on this challenge, if you follow it all the way through, you will commit suicide. You'll gladly commit suicide. Take up the challenge. And these kids... Most of them 15, 17 years old, they get online and they take the challenge. And he offers, I don't know how many challenges per day, maybe 30 or 45 days. And you have to, every day, it starts with something small, you have to do his challenge. Well, about halfway through, he says that you have to kill a cat or a dog or a defenseless animal. Studies have shown that the people who kill the animal finish it. The ones who don't kill the animal don't kill themselves, okay? And what he does is it's a group process. You get into this game, and then others who are playing the game shame you. This all goes really to the Jonathan Haidt book that I've been reading, The Righteous Mind, on how the mind works. Once you set it into a path, as long as you have people around you, if you start to go off the path, as long as your friends are like, no, no, go, do it, you pretty much will. It takes very, very few people will actually break from their friends. And so the peer pressure is great to continue to go and to do these things. Well, at the end, he keeps you up, and so you're tired, you're disoriented, he makes you get up in the middle of the night and do things, and then he's constantly disrupting your sleep pattern towards the end. Well, by the end, you're in a weakened state, and the last one is kill yourself. And I don't remember how many, is it 10, 15 people that he killed? And he's still doing it by mail, no longer on the internet, because he's in jail in Russia. But they say they can't stop him. Here's the idea. He's in jail. Stop him from writing the letters. You're Russia. So, yeah. I mean, how hard is that? So when he was in under investigation and on trial, he said, I'm only thinning the herd. All of these people are too weak to live. So I'm just thinning the herd and getting rid of the weak ones. Well, he's in jail. What did he do wrong? If she didn't do wrong, he didn't do wrong. If she didn't do wrong, Manson didn't do wrong, because he never killed anyone. He just encouraged others to do it.
Yeah, it's weird. And I don't know about you, at this point, particularly in our history, I find stories that are not just based on partisan lines a lot more interesting.
Yes.
Because you can't tell who really believes the arguments they're making anymore.
I know.
I mean, that really is the thing. This is from David French, however, who's from the National Review, conservative. This is what he says. I see two problems with this verdict, one moral, the other legal. First, Conrad Roy, the boyfriend, is responsible for his death.
Yes.
To argue that Carter committed manslaughter is to diminish Roy's moral agency. It denies his free will. It's wrong to deny compassion to someone who's troubled that they may commit suicide, but we can't move so far in the other direction that we race to find who's really to blame when a person voluntarily takes their own life.
Okay, hang on just a second. It's not that she didn't offer compassion.
Right, she encouraged it.
She encouraged it.
Mm-hmm. It's still an act of self-murder, and while Carter undoubtedly played a persuasive role, I can't imagine where we will draw the line.
Okay, so
Hang
on, let me give you. I have a personal story that relates directly to this, and I think it is what David French is talking about, and I think that there is a difference. I'll share that when we come back in just a second. The United States Concealed Carry Association, the USCCA, Concealed Carry Association, the first and largest organization that is dedicated to protecting responsible gun owners before, during, and especially after a self-defense act. You know, I spend a lot of time making sure that I'm prepared, that I know what I'm doing, that I'm good with guns. I never grew up around guns. I mean, my grandfather had them. But, you know, I don't know anybody who carried the pistol. You know, my grandfather, I don't think, had one. And so carrying a pistol was a really big deal. So I've been doing everything I can to be really responsible. I never even thought about what my life is like after if I had to discharge my firearm. It is a really big deal. And you will, for 3 years, you will be under investigation, you will be going to court, and most people who have ever discharged their firearms, very few cases leave you with anything left. Usually the legal bills are so outrageous that the average person just can't handle it. That's where the USCCA comes in. They have insurance. They make sure that you are covered. So if something happens, you're okay. They'll defend you. Now, in honor of Independence Day, just around the corner, the USCCA is celebrating our forefathers and our Second Amendment freedom with a great American giveaway. Five lucky winners are going to receive $1,776, $1,776, to buy the gun and the ammo of their choice. And instead of just drawing one winner, they're drawing five, which means you have five chances to win. Just visit protectanddefend.com and enter protectanddefend.com. And if you're carrying a gun without protection, make sure you check out what they have to offer. There is nothing out there like it. Just go to protectanddefend.com right now. That's protectanddefend.com and get your five chances to win. Do it now. We
are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
So we're talking about this girl who Friday was convicted of involuntary manslaughter because she encouraged her boyfriend to commit suicide. And she was actually on the phone encouraging him while he did it. She listened to him. He got out of a truck in a garage, and he had for months said he was going to do it. She was encouraging him for months. And he got out, and he said he was afraid, called her. She said, "What are you doing out of the truck? You promised you were going to do it. You're going to be fine. Get back in the truck and listen to him while he died." Horrible. Wow. Horrible. Now, the conservative point of view from David French is two parts, and I want to address the first part before we get to the second. The first part is we should have compassion, and we can't regulate because it is your free choice to kill yourself. Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. But let me share something about my mother's suicide. I didn't know my mother was suicide. None of us kids knew that she was suicidal. But my grandparents did. My aunt did. And they had encouraged her to get help, et cetera, et cetera. And she apparently, in the last year of her life, had threatened this a lot. And the family had done everything that they could. And she wouldn't take any of the advice, and she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do. And one day, she went over to my aunt's house, and my aunt was very frustrated with my mother. And she said, my mother said, "You know, Joanne, I'm just going to do it." And my aunt looked at my mother and said, "You know what, Mary? Then just do it." Now, that's not what her advice was. Her advice the whole time was seek help, get help. We're here for you, but you have to change your life. She was tired of hearing what she thought was an empty threat just to, what, gain sympathy or whatever. She didn't understand it. My aunt carried that around for decades after my mother died. Because my mother committed suicide about, I think it was 5 days later, 4 or 5 days later. And my aunt immediately thought, "Oh my gosh, and I told her to do it." No, sweetheart, you didn't. You didn't. You said something very human in a moment of frustration with a sister who had been threatening to do it for a long time and you supported for years.
And that's a different thing than we're talking about.
Totally different. Mm-hmm. So I understand because partly I am afraid that you have a moment like that and anybody could be blamed for it. And that's not what we're talking about. This is somebody who over months was encouraging. Now, the second part of his argument is where it gets dangerous. And it gets dangerous because we no longer have a right and wrong. We no longer have a moral foundation for our country and for us as humans. We can't agree on what is right and wrong, so we need the judge to do it. And don't think that there will be people that will use this case to make all kinds of points. And here's where David French makes sense.
He says, second, the First Amendment implications are real with this verdict. Carter's actions, the girl's actions, were reprehensible, but she was sharing with him thoughts and opinions that he may have found persuasive, but had the capacity to reject. A legal argument that renders otherwise protected speech unlawful because it actually persuades would blast a hole in First Amendment jurisprudence. When a young man dies, especially under these circumstances, the desire to hold someone accountable is entirely understandable. But the law can't and shouldn't try to right every wrong. Michelle Carter should go free. That's his argument. Now, I mean, because you can think about this in the perspective of what happened last week. You know, let's just say the other way it happened. A crazy right-wing person who was influenced by all sorts of right-wing propaganda.
They'd be using this case to go after people. Let's say instead of Rachel Maddow, he was listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
This case to go after me.
Your speech, if he had called in, and you had talked to him and encouraged him to take action, and even though it wasn't violent action, they would use that. They will take this.
Well, let's
this
use this
standard
for despicable.
And move it past
let's
us.
Use this as true despicable speech on the so-called right. Alex Jones and Ping Pong Pizza.
Yeah.
Or the woman who went up and, what does she do, threatened the life of one of the Newtown parents?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, from Florida.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, a woman from Florida who said she was listening to Alex Jones and he had, quote, encouraged her to go up and take care of these lying Newtown parents. Well, doesn't he play some role? In all honesty, yes. But don't we have free choice? Yes. So what is the answer? We go there next. Congressman Steve Scalise has had several surgeries and is doing better today. That is really good news. And tomorrow, I'm going to show you, I really believe divine providence kicked in last week. A week ago Tuesday was the shooting at the ballpark. Was it Tuesday or was it Wednesday? It was Tuesday, wasn't it? No, because Bill O'Reilly was on last Tuesday, wasn't he? So it was Wednesday, I think. And we're going to do a special episode. I've asked some fiction writers, some thriller writers, some politicians, some media experts, all of whom will remain nameless. Tell me what you think could have happened if we were this last weekend burying 30 congressmen and senators. What would be happening in the world right now? It's pretty bleak, and I'm only showing you this because I want to show you how close to the edge we really are. But I may not make it to that show to be able to tell you that. Why? Breaking news this morning. We shot down a Syrian fighter jet. We shot it down. Russia has responded this morning with this news. We will shoot down any American plane. What is it?
West of the Euphrates.
West of the Euphrates. They have also stopped the hotline between our military. There was a hotline between us because this is a very tight airspace. And it's easy to make a mistake. And so we've had a hotline between our you know, flight directors, if you will. Hey, your plane is over here. Sorry, didn't mean to. Please don't shoot it down. Not hostile.
Yeah, conflict resolution, basically.
Correct. Mm-hmm. A way for us to communicate with each other. Russia has just shut that down and said, we will take that as a hostile act, anything west of the Euphrates. Gang, I believe we are either at war or we are really, really close to war. And it is not going to be like it was in, Afghanistan, or is in Afghanistan. One of these wars that you can just, oh, well, we're at war with another country, and you don't pay attention to. This changes the entire world. We'll get into that here in a second. Reason why I'm bringing up this woman who encouraged her boyfriend, or this girl who encouraged her boyfriend to kill himself for months, is because you are not in your right mind. When you are suicidal, I'm sorry, but all reason has broken down. And I know this as a guy who has had two suicides in his family and has been suicidal himself. I was suicidal. Pat, have I ever been? I've never been suicidal since we've known each other.
No, I think it was just before.
Yeah, just before. It was in the 80s. And I've had depression. I'm prone. My whole family is prone to clinical depression. And in the 80s, before I knew about medication, they were still using things like Elavil, which was a really nasty kind of drug, to help you with depression. I've told you before, I've gone through it. I always say that cowardice saved my life. But I thank God that I'm a coward. I couldn't think about putting a gun to my head. I just couldn't have done it. I looked at a pillar of a bridge abutment on 84 in Louisville, Kentucky. I passed it every single day. And every single day, both to and from work, I prayed, Lord, give me the strength to plow my car into that. He never did, thank God. And when you actually go through it, all reason breaks down. You really do believe that if you were gone, everyone around you would be happy. That you are the source of all problems. It's like I would read my own press. And you are the source of all problems. And that is true to you. And no amount of get over it, just be happy, go see a happy movie, let's go out and have fun. None of that makes a difference. No reason will penetrate. The second thing that you think is, and this is where it gets, this is where suicide becomes real. You just want the pain to stop. If you've ever, you know what, I hate to minimize it, but as somebody who's gone through it, I think I'm allowed to do this. It's like the moment right before you vomit. Like 2 minutes before you vomit, to where you're like, oh, just let me vomit. I just want this to be over. And then that moment as you're getting closer to it, you're like, no, 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 okay, 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 I don't want to vomit. Okay? There is, you just want it to stop. And nothing you've tried will make it stop. So, A, you're not in your right mind. And what she did was incite. She went and personally incited that person. That's different. Because she's, you can't say something like that to somebody who's not in their right mind, because they will do it. And you're inciting. And it's literal incitement. So what is the cure for this? Let me start here. Man's love for man is cold. Men's hearts are failing them. Men's hearts are cold to their fellow man. We don't care as much about each other. We're tired of hearing the arguments. We're tired of hearing the whining. We're tired of all of this stuff. And so we're just sick of it and we want it to stop. Does that sound familiar? Because that sounds like the mind of a suicidal person, except we're not suicidal. We just don't mind if other people get out of our way no matter what it takes. Just shut up. That's man's love for man going cold. And our heart has failed us because, as David French said, we have to have compassion, and it's wrong when compassion isn't offered. But we're not working on compassion at all. I wrote something yesterday. I got out of church, and I went home, and I wrote something that I want to share with you that is really known before the Greeks were around in philosophy. But it just hit me clearly yesterday that this is where we are. In life, but especially in times of strife, you will not rise to the level of your expectations or desire. So think of this. Think this through with me. In life, we all think we are, or expect, that when things get tough, we're going to stand up. We're going to be the one. Oh, we'll do that. Oh, I would have stopped slavery. And we all expect to rise to a certain level. But it is true that in life, especially in times of strife, you're not going to rise to the level of your expectations or desire. Instead, you will fall to the level of your preparation. You're not suddenly going to become Hercules. You're going to become the person that you prepared yourself to be. So what have you prepared for? What have you mentally done the homework on? It goes back to my father, And the most important thing I think my father, well, one of the most important things my father taught me. I should make a list of those. One of the things he taught me was, Glenn, you don't want to be like me? I promise you, if you don't replace everything that I have taught you about being a father, you're going to be exactly like me. And that is true. I was very much like my father. A good dad, just not a dad that was very present in any way. Until I started to replace that image of what it means to be a good dad. And actually replaced it with things that I could see, things that I could understand, things that I could follow in good times and bad. I prepared myself to be a better dad than my father was. I had to prepare myself for it. I had to do the things to not say, oh, well, I'm just going to be better than that. No, you're not. I'm just going to be better. No, you are not going to be better than your mom or your dad. You're not. Unless you've done the homework to be better. You're not going to be the person that stands up and saves the world unless you've prepared to be that person. You're not going to be the person that can rally everyone around the cause and lead them away from the cliff unless you've prepared to be that person. Corrie ten Boom, Paulina in Poland that saved all of those Jews that I quote all the time. Glenn, you misunderstand. The righteous didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with everyone else. Well, why is that? If you look at those who saved, those who were really, truly righteous, there was always something. Oscar Schindler. What was his motivation? At first, it was to make money. He had prepared himself to be a great capitalist. And to be a great capitalist and prepare himself to succeed no matter what was going on, at first, Oscar Schindler just took advantage of the cheap labor. He didn't rise to the expectations. He fell to where he was prepared. He saw an opportunity and he took it. Paulina, Corrie ten Boom, their parents prepared them to be those kinds of people because they studied the scriptures, because they prayed all the time, because they used real examples, because they actually went out and helped people, and their compassion for others was fostered. You just don't have compassion for others in this society. We're swimming in a sea of filth. We're swimming in a sea that shows no compassion. Our video games, it's deadening the compassion because it's not, they're not real. Nothing is real to us anymore. Where does food come from, gang? Food comes from the supermarket. When you go and talk to kids, especially in the cities, and you ask them, where does meat come from? They will tell you, from the store. Yes, but where does the store get it? From the meat place. What is meat? They can't tie it to a farm. They can't tie it to an animal. We're not preparing our children for anything. You will fall to the level of your preparation. You will not rise to the level of your expectations. Sponsor this half hour is American Financing. Your mortgage experience doesn't need to be stressful. If you're ready to buy or ready to refinance, you need consultants that are dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that align with your unique financial goal. I'm going to do something that nobody ever does in commercial radio. I'm going to tell you about a client that American Financing did not do business with. It is somebody who went and did uber amounts of homework, probably went to 10 different mortgage consultants, and it's just the kind of person this guy is, and he just worked it and worked it and worked it and worked it. He got down to two deals. One was really, really good, and the other one was really, really good, except it had one extra level. He didn't have to put any money down. He brought both of them to American Finance, because American Finance was the first one. He brought them both to American Finance, and I'll let him tell you the rest of the story. Stu, what did they tell you?
They actually told me to take the other deal. They told me that it was really good, and I was asking for something very quirky and not normally the type of mortgage they did at American Finance, and they actually sent me to another company because it was a better deal.
They took it and said, we'll get back to you. Let us look at this. They took it back for an hour. And he was asking for, I don't want to pay. I don't want any money down.
Yeah, I hate people yeah, money.
I know. Well, that's why this company stays in business. Is they don't like to
Oh,
have
I don't care if the
default.
Other company stays in business or not.
So I know. So, but that's the kind of people they are. They will find the best deal for you because they don't make the money. The sales consultants don't make the money on if you take their deal or not. So they're not motivated to get you into anything. The right deal for you. Reverse mortgages are a good way to increase monthly cash flow with no mortgage payment while still retaining ownership of your home, depending on the situation that you are in. Ask them about reverse mortgages. Call their number, 800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or go to AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. There is another armed and dangerous shooter at a mall in Massachusetts today. They are shutting things down. We'll give you the latest on that. Also, are we now at war with Russia? What does this mean? We go to the experts next.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
One more step closer to war. The world is still moving in a very dangerous direction. The Russians have just cut off our communication and coordination between our planes and said this morning that if we cross into Syria airspace, anything west of the Euphrates, they will shoot it down. At the same time, they shut down our coordination. We've always had communication with them, saying, okay, we're going here. Wait a minute, I see one of your planes. No, 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 that's a mistake. Don't shoot at us. They shut that down. The world is a much more dangerous place than it was while you were sleeping. We'll give you all the details and so much more right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I'm so glad that you're here. There is some news that happened over the weekend with the president's new attorney, an actual friend of the program. We'll give you the details on that coming up in just a second. Also, high schools now are starting to abandon their valedictorian because, and I'm quoting, competition is bad. Some really amazing stats that you need to look at on why some very, very smart people say the economy is not what everybody says it is, at least for the stock market. five predictions from very smart investors on why they say we should be watching and what we should be watching for the stock market to crash. And Elon Musk says he wants to link computers to our brains to prevent a threat to humanity. This is fascinating. Perfect. He said, everybody else is going for artificial intelligence. Why don't we instead link our brains to computers? That way the computer won't see us as a threat. It will see us as part of it.
Mm. Okay.
Mm. Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
It, you know, part of that does sound really
great.
Yes,
it does.
I mean, boy, wouldn't it be great to be able to process anything that you wanted to process? It would be pretty amazing if we could actually use, you know, our entire brain.
If it worked both ways, if the computer could download into you a foreign language or something that you would almost instantly know.
Yes.
That would be great.
It would be amazing.
Yeah.
It would be amazing and hard to resist.
Yeah. Almost impossible because everybody be doing it. Just like, what's his face from Google says, everybody will be doing it.
Yeah.
And
Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah, Ray Kurzweil.
You'll be an outdated model. You'll be a Model T. I mean,
you'll realize that to succeed in business and in life, you'll have to do it because everybody else is.
But wouldn't it be interesting if you wanted to live the life you're living right now, that we would be considered the Amish?
Yeah.
Because that's the way it would be.
It would.
And any just society would not see the Amish as a threat. Any just society would say, just leave me alone. Mm-hmm. Just leave me alone. I don't want anything to do with you guys and your laws and, you know, that crazy stuff that you guys are doing. We're just going to live over here by ourselves. I don't think this society would allow that to happen.
What was that really awful movie with what's her face? Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson
was in it.
The Island?
And it was
done
by the Chinese.
Ghost in the Machine.
Ghost in the Machine.
Oh, that was
horrible,
bad.
But it was along these lines.
Yeah.
Everybody was part computer.
Yeah.
And
you got a problem with that?
It didn't turn out well for them. Didn't turn out well.
Well, we don't know because it still has. I mean, there's another chapter or 10 to see.
Oh, yes.
The thing is, we don't know because no one saw it outside of YouTube. This is a gigantic bomb.
I see almost every movie made. So, but it was really bad.
Really bad.
It was really bad. But it wasn't made for us. It was made for the Asian markets. So. Enough of that. Now, we have moved to a new place overnight. We shot down a Syrian fighter. This is the first time. We have just been tolerating this kind of action for years. Under Obama, this is just the way it was. You could do anything to us. We're not going to do anything to you. Well, Syrian fighter and an American fighter meet, and we shoot it down. Was it the right thing? Was it the wrong thing? It just, at this point, is. So when that story broke, the immediate thought, at least from me, was, uh-oh, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. The game has changed. Now, there's something to be said for being Americans and saying, hey, we have these lines. But I personally would like to know when we're going to change those lines. I'd like some discussion to happen that, oh, by the way, we're perceiving this as escalating. They're perceiving this as an escalation of war. I would imagine that we all perceive this as, no, we're just holding our own. That's not the way the Russians and the Syrians see it. And I'm not really concerned about the Syrians. I am concerned about the Russians. The Iranians have pretty much swept through Iraq. We've pretty much lost Iraq. And we've lost Iraq not to ISIS. ISIS, we are actually fighting back and making some progress. It's the Iranians who are a horrible terrorist lot that are now all the way across Iraq and now starting to penetrate the Syrian border below us, below the Euphrates River in Iraq and Syria. So what the Kurds, and not the good Kurds, but the bad Kurds, the Syrian Kurds are bad Kurds. They don't even speak the same language. They're both Kurds, but their nations or their peoples have been separate since the early 20th century. We separated them. They don't speak the same language. They are Marxist, Leninist, radicals, and terrorists. Because they're against Turkey and Syria, we love them, and we're arming them, which we shouldn't be doing. But they're also against the Iranians, so they're our friends. This is going to come and bite us in the ass.
It's the typical mess that we get into
almost every time. That's what Benghazi was about, guys. Make no mistake. We were arming ISIS. Mm. We were taking guns from Libya, running them through Benghazi, putting them on a ship, sending them to Turkey, bringing them across the border, and arming ISIS. That's what Benghazi is about. This is going to happen again. And we are now arming these really bad communist revolutionary killers. And nobody seems to have a problem with it.
Is there any explanation as to why we're arming Syrian Kurds? It's because they're fighting against the Syrian regime, and they're also fighting against ISIS.
Right. And so instead of actually doing our job the way we could do our job, we're arming people by proxy.
How do you even fight on the right side of this? You can't. There's no right side of the Syrian conflict.
None.
So what are we doing there?
Right.
What are we doing?
You want to fight for Turkey? No.
No.
Do you want to fight for Syria?
No.
Do you want to fight for ISIS?
No.
Do you want to fight for the Syrian Kurds who are Marxist revolutionary terrorists? No. Mm-mm. Who are you fighting for? Who are you fighting with? The only ones I want to fight with are the Christians in Iraq and the Kurds in Iraq. They are all pro-freedom. They all understand that. They're not running. They don't want to run. They just want to get up north to some safety to where they can get some arms, and they are fighting. Those guys I want to help, but those aren't the guys we're helping. I don't know why we're not helping them, but the only good guys in the region we've decided not to help. So they're on their own.
They're the ones we've continually not helped. Ever since the first Gulf War.
Yeah, they're the ones. We shoot down a Syrian jet today, but we don't give them a fly zone. Right. We don't help them at all. It's crazy what we've done to the Kurds. And not the Syrian Kurds. You have to understand, the Syrian Kurds are bad. The Iraqi Kurds are good. Really good. So now there is a no-fly zone for Americans. If we cross the Euphrates River to the west. If we cross the Euphrates River, Russia has said they will shoot down any of our planes. They have also, because this is a tight zone. I mean, it is really easy. You're on one side of the river, boom, you're on the other side of the river that fast. Imagine you're going 500 miles an hour. You cross a river in lightning speed. So we've always had a communication center set up between ourselves because there are too many jets and there are too many chances for mistakes to be made. And so we have a communication center. Russia has one, we have one, and it's like a hotline. And if one of the jets crosses a border, crosses some zone, they pick up the phone or we pick up the phone and say, hey, we're about to shoot down. What are your intents? And then immediately the answer is given. Don't shoot it down or, we're doing nefarious things or whatever it is. Take this. We know when there's a mistake, and we've turned back jets over and over and over again. Because of the firing on the Syrian jet today, Russia has taken that away and now said we will shoot down anything that crosses the Euphrates River. So this is the war. I talked about this last week. This is the war that is coming. And the war that is coming is on the southern border of Syria, northern border of Iraq, southwestern border of Iraq, just before the Euphrates. So if you would look at a map, it's a crescent shape, and that's what Iran is after. They're going for a crescent control of that whole region from Iran through Iraq to Syria up to Turkey. They want to control that. Well, Turkey wants to control Turkey, Syria into Iraq. So they're both coming down exactly the same way. And we're arming people that the Kurds in Syria that also want their own nation in Syria and Turkey. So we're arming the people who are against not only Syria, Iran, ISIS, but also against Turkey. That's why Turkey wants all of them dead. We are on the wrong side because, as Pat said, there is no right side here. There is no right side. And I just want you to know you are one step closer to total chaos in the Middle East. Now this, my Patriot Supply. Boy, it's a properly timed commercial. While the world events are moving faster every day and the bad headlines seem almost normal now, you can be prepared for whatever comes. I said last hour that you never, especially in times of trouble, you never rise to the level of expectations. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. If things get trouble, I'll tell you. You don't rise to the level of expectations. You fall to the level of preparedness. How prepared are you for the world to change? May I suggest you start taking that position. Take a positive step and have emergency food supply. Be prepared before the next crisis. The company I trust is My Patriot Supply, and right now they have 4-week survival food supply for $99. That includes free shipping. 4 weeks of food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 4 weeks for $99. You are not going to find that anyplace else. And this is good stuff. Call 800-200-7163, or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. That's preparewithglenn.com, or call 800-200-7163. Emergency food that lasts up to 25 years and will help you so you are prepared and not worried about the level of expectations. You know exactly how prepared you are. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Hello and welcome to the program. We are so glad that you have joined us. I have to tell you, last week we had a bunch of students in for a 2-week period. There, we have new students coming in for leadership training in 2 more weeks. Oh, I'm sorry, next week. And we really urge you to find out about this and help support us in this. You can do that by going to mercury1.org and making a donation there. This is a leadership training for 18 to 25-year-olds. These guys that came in last week, I spent Friday afternoon with them, they are ready to go home and tear it up. We had one guy who was an agnostic and still left an agnostic, I think. But I asked him, I said, so what was the thing that you really came away with? And he said, how important the Bible was to the foundation of our country. He said, you know, I've always heard it was a Christian nation, blah, blah, blah. And he said, and it's agnostic, you know. But here's how I know now that this was the foundation of the country, and I know how that is meant. The number one thing that I heard was, from these kids, and they're all, you know, some of, I can't call them kids, two of them, maybe three of them were teachers. One of them was a history teacher. One of them was an English teacher, and I don't remember the other one. I said, what did you get? Have to go back to original sources. You can't read anything that is somebody's opinion on somebody's opinion on somebody's opinion. You have to go back to the original sources. A. Game over once you start teaching that. Once people start to realize, oh, wait a minute, there is truth. Second thing I heard a lot was our generation is looking for truth. Just nobody's telling us where to find it. And third, heard this from almost everybody. I have completely miscast the Bible. I have to go back and look and actually read the Bible.
What a concept.
What That's a concept.
It. Yeah.
Because it's complete. It's not what they think it is.
Mm-hmm.
We invite you to get involved and read more about it. And you can watch last Thursday's show on The Blaze to see these 18 to 20, 25-year-olds. You're going to be very impressed. These are just the leadership interns, if you will, the people who are coming in or training to lead the way back to common sense. Know how to find the answers. Know how to think, not what to think, and do your own homework. And it's all done by you and your donations at mercury1.org, and we thank you for that. Now, in the opposite direction, schools now are abandoning the valedictorians. Now,
it's so weird. When I was in my hometown, was it last week before last?
Yeah.
And I went to my high school's website, and I was just kind of looking around, and it had the valedictorian list. 25 valedictorians.
Wait.
20.
Isn't valedictorian the...
It is the student who has the highest grades in that particular class who gives the graduation address.
Right.
Not the 25 students.
Were they all tied?
They apparently, they've all tied at the top. Maybe they'll all give the graduation address together. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, it's not. So that's actually how this started was there was a bleeding of, well, wait a minute. I should get that too. My daughter should have, my son is just as good.
You know, and that's so what happened.
You know, that's what happened. So they all started to bleed into more and more and more valedictorians. Now schools are starting to say none whatsoever, but not for the reason you might think.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Hello, America. According to the National Association of Secondary School Principals, nearly half of all high schools in the United States no longer report any class rank.
Wow.
It's according to the Associated Press. The graduation tradition of naming a senior class valedictorian is slowly fading into history. In areas where the tradition continues, more students are being named at the head of the class. Helena, like, Montana.
How many 25 valedictorians.
How many people are in the Helen, Montana?
Well, in the graduating class, in my class, there was 460 or something. So it's probably fairly sizable.
So listen to this. The reason is because administrators are increasingly concerned about, quote, unhealthy competition.
So ridiculous.
And students feeling pressure to perform better than their peers. I know, because in real life, that never happens.
Never happens. Never. You don't have to compete with anybody for anything.
No. Everything is just handed. You know one of my favorite lines from Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters? Do you know what it is? Jeffy.
Yeah, the Bill Murray line where he talks about they make you work out there, right?
It's Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, okay.
But Dan Aykroyd looks at him and says, you don't know what this means.
They expect results.
Yeah, you don't know what it's like out in the private sector. They expect results.
Did you see this? Tennessee school, a magnet school in Tennessee, awarded 48 valedictorians this year, 25% of the graduating class.
High school in Columbia, Maryland ranked the students but kept the results private to each student. Of course, the students couldn't keep quiet where they landed. Two seniors from Hammond High School said that's what everybody talked about. It makes everything 10 times more competitive. Some parents don't like the competition, saying students place too much emphasis on rankings and it can lead to negative perceptions of themselves.
Oh, you know what?
Can I tell you something? You know what leads to negative perceptions about yourself? Living under a bridge. That one. That you will be like, I'm a homeless person. No, you're not. No, you're not. You are a person who has connected with the outdoors. Oh, I feel so much better now. I'm a homeless person. Yes, because mommy and daddy never taught you about competition. Competition is good. Competition, you know, this is why I really like cross-country training, is competition is be the, I know, well, that's why I'm so fit. Competition is about being better yourself. Can you better what you just did? Better your time. That's, I mean, yes. Is there going to be a winner? Yes. But are you better? Can you beat your own personal time? Can you be better? Yes. This whole idea that I don't have any responsibility to be my best self, that I don't have any responsibility to compete in life? How do you think we got the light bulb? That was a literal competition between people in France, people in the United States, Edison, Tesla. I mean, people were competing to be the first one to bring a light bulb. What do you think Tesla is all about? Being the first to go to Mars. What do you think, what do you think Apple is all about?
Competing against Google and Microsoft and everybody else. Plus, the competition within the company itself. There's going to be a ton of competition.
No, there's not.
They all get participation trophies.
Yes.
Right.
Everybody lives in a very big house. Nobody drives any other car. Well, in this particular case, it's true. Everybody drives a Prius. But everybody has exactly the same stuff. It's all equal outcomes.
No.
Steve Jobs, he didn't have more money than everybody else.
Yeah, I think you're going to find that's not the case.
No, there was no competition there.
Not the case.
No competition.
Even liberal as Bill Gates is, he's got a 52,000 square foot home. It's a little bit bigger than most of his employees.
Really?
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Here's
the truth. Stop listening to him. Here's the truth. He takes Leonardo da Vinci's Codex, and everybody gets it over their fireplace for a month. If you work at Microsoft, everyone gets to hang Leonardo da Vinci's Codex over their fireplace.
Whether you're the janitor or...
And there's no competition for it. It's just alphabetically, assigned.
Every employee is just guaranteed to receive it.
Yes, guaranteed to receive it. You hang it over your, no matter what the deal is. You could be the employee that's on your way out. Doesn't matter. You could be the employee that's stealing from the company. Doesn't matter. Get it. Now, it's alphabetically assigned, but they, just because that is showing preference, they shuffle the alphabet.
Oh, that's good.
So, okay.
And it always lands on Gates or Jobs or whatever.
It would be Gates. Yeah. Why the lies?
Well, it's interesting because you are the one that was propagating this idea that stealing is something that's possible, indicating you believe in ownership, private ownership of material. There's no such thing.
I'm sorry, that was the old Glenn coming out.
Thank you. I'm glad finally you see that. It's funny, they don't see competition as helpful. And how do you not? I mean, look at all the benefits that have come out of it.
Well, here's what I think the average person doesn't look and see as helpful. The competition, the way we have it, we used to believe in this country that it is your personal responsibility to be your best, to make your own way, to not be a burden on others, and that you had a blessing of getting an education. Now it's not that. Now it is, especially you go to places like New York, the parents will shiv you for a spot in a pre-nursery school.
Mm-hmm.
Because that pre-nursery school will lead you to the right kindergarten, which will lead you to the primary school and the secondary school, and you'll be able to get into Harvard. But if you drool too much in the pre-nursery school, they will tell you this is a sign that they're not going to make it to Harvard, and they really need to stop drooling so much. They're 5 months old. I mean, that's the unhealthy competition.
I think a lot of these parents, though, can't see beyond just their feelings right now of feeling like, oh, gosh, I'm not number one in the class, so I'm worthless. Well, they're going to have to deal with that. They're going to have to deal with that in life. And I don't know that they're looking forward. They're so short-sighted.
But it is, again, the parents. What happened when the school said, keep this to yourself? All the kids, they know they're competing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's natural. Who's better at this than you can't play sports unless it's always a tie. And even then, you're going to know when this guy gets up, he is going to slam this thing out of the park. We all have different skills.
And sports, along with, valedictorian races, it's a good, meaningless thing to teach that lesson on. Right? Like losing a sporting event in the grand scheme of your life is not that big of a deal, but it's a great way to learn the lesson of how to react after you lose. It's a great way to learn a lesson of how to work harder in the future.
And it's about the parents spinning that the right way for the child to help them understand and deal with that.
Mm-hmm. And it's also important to understand this, and I think this is a great stat. Just read this one a couple of weeks ago. Valedictorians are not, generally speaking, the movers and the shakers of the next generation. They generally, they'll get good jobs, but they're generally not the ones who are the big entrepreneurs. They're not the big money makers, et cetera, et cetera. Because of this, they are taught exactly what to think. They live in this box that is structured by college and high school. And really, honestly, what are you learning in high school? You're memorizing dates. You're taught to learn skills that you will never, ever use again. Not the information. The test-taking skills. The memorization of dates and names and places. When does that come in handy?
So it makes, I mean, it's not without value, right? Like a lot of these people are making $100,000 a year at good jobs and discipline and
hard
they work
and
well within the system. And there's a lot there. But I mean, I was listening to an interview with a guy who started Five Guys, place. It was a financial services guy, goes in, decides he wants to start a burger place in New Jersey. I think it was New Jersey. Virginia. And he starts it and he lets his kids pick out all the ingredients. You pick the best tasting mayonnaise. Won't tell them anything about food cost. Won't tell them which one's more expensive because he wants them to just pick the best one. They pick the best one. This is a ridiculous way to run a business. They go to name the business. He has four kids. He's like, I don't know. Let's call it Five Guys. We'll change it later. Now there's 1,500 locations. Because he decided he wanted to go and he believed in the quality of the product. He decided to work hard and do it in a different way.
Here's an interesting phrase that I'd like to share that kind of goes into that. Everybody says, think out of the box. You got to think out of the box. Yes, if that box is flawed and doesn't provide you anything but the same rubber stamp.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to think out of the box if you're creating a business. You want to create a new box. You have to have framework. Like, I can't go into Five Guys. I know what it looks like and say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put up some fake grapes on the side here because it'll look kind of, we'll attract those people who usually go to an Italian restaurant. And we're going to put some of those really cheesy Chinese lamps hanging from the ceiling too because we'll attract those. No, they have a box. We're Five Guys. It looks like this. This is what we serve. The secret is forget the box. Design your own box and stay within your own box. But nobody's teaching that. Everybody teaches get out of the box, which says there are no rules. There are rules. But in today's date, you have to find the rules that are eternal, like theft shouldn't be part of our business model.
Yes, no, it's true. It's true. And every one of the interviews with one of these crazy CEOs does something different. There are 500 stories of people who tried these things and failed. But that's the difference. That part of it is important. Many of those failures came from the same people who wound up succeeding later.
Yes.
You have to be able to embrace that failure.
Did that hurt their self-esteem for a little while?
Maybe.
It might have.
Sure.
It might have.
It should.
But they overcame it.
They overcame it and did things differently next time.
You mean that's possible?
There is. I have learned much more.
It's ridiculous.
I've learned much more from my failings than I ever have from my successes. Because my successes don't make me question anything. My successes go, dig me. Look at this. Huh? How great is that? I don't actually know what caused my success here or there. I can speculate, but I haven't had to put like, oh, crap, honey, I don't know why we're successful. How did we succeed? Where did we go right? I haven't done any of that. Every time I have a failure, I am going, where did we go wrong? Success teaches you very little. Failure teaches you almost everything important if you choose to view it that way. And now this. In the time it takes to complete this sentence, a home burglary has occurred in the United States. Most happen between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. So we are at the peak stealing times. Don't spend your workday worried about intruders in your home. Don't worry about it. Simply Safe, you have a completely wireless system that is really easy to install. You can build an arsenal for all-day protection in under an hour. Here's what happens. You go to the website, you pick out what you need. You're smart enough to do it. They give you recommendations. They have packages. But you can count the windows and doors, and you know where people are coming in. And if you need, do you have glass in your house? Maybe you should have glass break sensors, at least on the first floor. Do you worry about fire? You need a fire sensor. Where should it put? They'll tell you where it should go. Okay? It's that easy. Plus, a high-definition security camera. Not one of those bad, blurry ones. This is high definition. You can see everything. It comes in a box. You install it. There's no drilling, no holes, no wiring, none of it. It's all wireless. You start the base station, and it tells you how to put it all together and how to put it for your windows and everything else. In under an hour, I've done this. It's really easy, and there's no long-term contracts should you decide to have the 24/7 monitoring. So an alarm goes off, it calls police. You want that? It's $14.95 a month. You want it just this month and not met next month? That's fine. You design it. It's your box. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. Get a special 10% discount off your home security system when you order today. It's SimplySafeBeck.com. 10% off SimplySafeBeck.com.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
So, we have a couple of minutes here. Let's talk about the actual... Is there something to I'm brokenhearted? Scientists now say yes.
Yeah, it's apparently something that you also maybe never heal from. They've actually found physical changes to your heart that take place. The British Heart Foundation just did a study, and they say that a broken heart is provoked when the heart muscle is suddenly stunned, which causes the left ventricle to change shape and is typically prompted by intense emotional stress. So that affects the heart's ability to pump blood, and there remains no known medical cure.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
that's amazing that we have always said for forever. I mean, I bet you, I would love to see when me being heartbroken became part of the lexicon. I bet you hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And now to find out scientifically that that's actually true.
Actually happening.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
Let's do some homework on that in the next 7 minutes.
All right.
Also, we have a few really kind of fun updates for you that I think you'll enjoy coming up after the break.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Elon Musk wants to link computers to our brains. And he says that's to protect us. And I actually believe he is correct on that. We'll get to that if we have time this hour. There's a lot going on. It's going to collapse. There are five predictions from some really smart investors that you need to be aware of. Because all of them are saying there's a lot of scenarios that make this whole house cards come tumbling down. One of them is, war. Things have changed since you maybe even got to work or left for work today. And that is the U.S. shot down a fighter jet from Syria, and Russia has now said, any American jet that crosses the Euphrates, we're taking down. Oh, and by the way, we're getting rid of the hotline between our commanders. The world is a much more dangerous place. But I would say there was a little bit of progress made last night. I begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So glad you've joined us today. Let's start with Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly did her controversial interview last night, which, my gosh, did the press help her out? Everybody trying to tear her down. That was the least controversial the segment I think I've ever seen.
She handled that so well, I think, on behalf of the families of Sandy Hook.
Yes.
I couldn't have been done any better by her.
No, I mean, still, too, with Alex Jones, are you kidding me? That was a puff piece compared to what she could have done.
Oh, my gosh.
She didn't even
bring
get
up
into
the most incendiary weirdness.
Yeah, they shouldn't bring
that
up
he brings to the table.
The animal human hybrids.
She didn't get into the weird sort of funny stuff. The Sandy Hook stuff probably is the most incendiary thing.
Yeah, it probably is. But she didn't get into the golden babies being roasted and eaten by the Bilderbergers or the owl people or whatever that is.
That's the owl people.
Yeah, it's the owl people.
Yeah.
She didn't get into any of that. That's Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
Like you don't know.
I don't even honestly understand, and I didn't understand this last week, the argument as to why she shouldn't do this interview. It's been done, you know, he's been profiled by other sources before that have been high profile.
The New York Times. She's in a lose-lose situation. There's so many people that just don't like Megyn Kelly now because they just thought that she was, you know, making this, you know, that it started with the first Trump question at the first debate.
Well, that's where she lost the right. The left didn't like her before that because she was on Fox and they saw her as too conservative, which she's not. She's a journalist here. You see that as now she doesn't have the right allies or the left allies.
No, she's got
and
nobody.
This is an absurd targeting. The idea that you would say that she was doing something irresponsible by bringing up a guy, first of all, the president went on her show and people are, you know,
on his show.
And that was a pretty big deal at the time. Secondarily, the other president, Obama, also called out Jones in the last campaign. So we have two presidents on record talking about this guy.
So maybe you might want to know something about...
Expose
the lack of credibility there.
I will say, the way she presented the relationship between the president and Alex Jones with videotape. She didn't allege anything. Mm-hmm. She asked him. And then she presented the evidence. And I didn't even know that. I thought that was pretty stunning.
Well, I mean, again, you don't know how much of this is Alex Jones lying because he's constantly doing
No. She said, because he was constantly lying. And did anybody else notice he didn't make eye contact with her? When she would ask him a question, a tough question, he would break eye contact and he would look down and he would look around. Oof. And then he would finish and he would look up at her.
And it was so shifty. A sweaty mess, too, entire time.
But that's, I think that's the, you know, sweaty steroids mess or whatever he's on.
And it's also partially Jeffy syndrome.
Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, the idea that she was going to be like giving him some sort of credibility by this interview, I mean, he looked terrible.
On Father's Day? Terrible.
John Ronson, who we've had on the program before.
Yeah.
This is a guy who, our first ever exposure to Alex Jones, he came on the show when we were in Tampa, I believe.
Alex Jones did?
No.
No,
John Ronson.
John Ronson. And he wrote a book.
Sounds like a made-up name. John Ronson?
John Ronson, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's a great guy. He's been on the show a few times.
He's been on the show a few times. He was just on...
That's weird. I used to talk to Ron Johnson quite a bit. But,
that's an actual real name, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was just on our show. He's the guy with the English accent who... Yeah. He's really quite brilliant.
Yeah, he wrote a book about people who get shamed on the internet, which is why the most recent reason we had him on.
Yep.
However, he wrote a book, and he went with Alex Jones.
Yeah.
This is back when anyone knew who he was.
To the Bohemian Grove
to see the owl ceremony.
That's exactly when he did the bullhorn session about roasted golden babies being consumed by these guys.
Yeah, that's the same. Yeah, the same.
Same time.
I don't know if it was the same time. Yeah. It was the same festival.
I think
festival
it was the same time.
Yeah. Anyway, long story short, this guy has known Alex Jones before anybody else has in the media.
Yeah.
And he said that interview was the worst he's ever looked in an interview.
I believe that.
I mean, this is a guy who's been following him from long before any of us knew who he was.
Ronson said that Megyn Kelly
Thing was the worst he's ever looked on an interview.
Yeah.
Well, we should, I mean, listen to this, and you be the judge.
Here he is on InfoWars in December 2014.
But it took me about a year with Sandy Hook to come to grips with the fact that the whole thing was fake.
You said the whole thing is a giant hoax. How do you deal with a total hoax? It took me about a year with Sandy Hook to come to grips with the fact that the whole thing was fake. I did deep research, and my gosh, it just pretty much didn't happen.
At that point, and I do think there's some cover-up and some manipulation, that is pretty much what I believe. But then I was also going into devil's advocate, but then we know there's mass shootings.
Going into devil's advocate.
So, yeah. You're trying to-
okay, that is a weird... series of sentences.
So at that time, I really did feel that way. Yeah, but also there's some weird things going on, and then I was also playing devil's advocate, and then I also believed it did happen. So I've really taken every position on every single
but that's
possible.
What he does. He says outrageous things, and then he says, "Well, at that time, I was only playing devil's advocate."
Clearly, he did believe it.
Yeah. Oh, no, he believed it,
and he was promoting it.
He believed it for months and months and months, if not years.
And by the way, he never in the interview actually says he doesn't believe it. He's not.
That is true.
Listen to the bigger part. Right?
No, I'm not.
If you wrongly went out there and said it was a hoax, that's wrong.
But what I already answered your question was, listeners and other people are covering this. I didn't create that story.
But Alex,
you're blaming
the
listeners.
Parents, one after the other.
Listeners.
Devastated. The dead bodies that the coroner autopsied.
And they've blocked all that and they won't release any of it. That's unprecedented.
All of the parents decided to come out and lie about their dead children.
I didn't say that.
What happened to the children?
I will sit there on the air and look at every position and play devil's advocate.
Was that devil's advocate? The whole thing is a giant hoax. The whole thing was fake.
Yes, because I remember in...
Oh, man.
Even that day, I'll go back from memory, then saying, but then some of it looks like it's real. But then what do you do when they've got the kids going in circles in and out of the building with their hands up? And watch the footage. And it looks like a drill.
When you say...
Because we just looked at this footage.
In and out,
ridiculous.
The kids, he keeps referencing kids going around the building in circles. What is that?
I mean, we're it appears to just be... people walking out of one side of a building and walking into
the
other,
around.
But not over and over again, just once. Yeah. Like, they walk out of one exit and walk into another entrance in a line, which is what you would do if someone said, hey, we need you to walk to the front door, there's another area you need to go to there. Like, that's what it appears to be. I mean, again, I don't know the full and it's obviously, manipulated like crazy online.
If it was a hoax, though.
It's not, but like, why would that,
what
would that
do? Mean?
Right.
What does it mean that they walked around the building?
Nothing.
What does that mean?
Nothing. That's the point.
So they weird. Get
you, and that's why I hate even looking this stuff up, because when you look it up, you're like, oh, well, maybe this is true. First of all, it's not. Second of all, even if it was true, it would mean nothing. You know, again, the 9/11 towers came down under this idiot's reasoning to throw us into war with Iraq. So why the hell didn't we blame Iraq for it? Why the hell didn't George Bush come out the next day and say, you know what, who did this? A guy from Iraq. Why the hell didn't we go to war with Iraq right away? Why did we waste time going to war with Afghanistan? Why did we tell anyone about the Taliban? Why didn't we just go to war with Iraq? We all would have believed it, right? Mm-hmm. If the president of the United States came out and said, Saddam Hussein, he tweeted something even before Twitter that said, I'm going to take down the World Trade Center, we all would have been like, holy crap, because Saddam Hussein is an obvious adversary. We had already been to war with him. He had tried to assassinate a former president. We all would have believed that they were responsible. In fact, people believed it even when we didn't say it.
Stu and I actually did our homework in 1998-99 on Osama bin Laden. We knew who he was. Mm-hmm. We knew that he had threatened New York. We knew that he had threatened the financial district. And when the World Trade Centers came down 2 years later, we said to each other, who the hell would have done something like this? We knew it. We had done our homework. And when they said it's Osama bin Laden, we were like, Osama bin Laden, who is it? Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that guy? If we had done our homework, nobody knew. Nobody knew. Because we had even forgotten about it. Nobody knew.
And of course, a lot of this goes on partisan lines. If you remember correctly, which people don't today, about half of Democrats believed George Bush either took down the World Trade Center or allowed it to happen to go to war with Iraq, based largely on theories propagated by the moron Megyn Kelly is interviewing here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a right-wing thing. The left, half of Democrats believed this because they didn't like George Bush at the time. Now, because Barack Obama became president, and then he started saying things about he wasn't born here, and that he was doing all these other crazy things to our society, many of which were not true, just like they weren't true against George W. Bush, people on the right started embracing him because they were taking down someone the right didn't like. That's not the way this is supposed to work. You're supposed to actually analyze. And this guy has done enough crap that you should always start at not believing him. Always. 100% of the time when he says something, if he says the sky is blue, you should assume it's green until confirmed otherwise. Always. His record is so lengthy on these things that there is no reason to ever believe anything he says unless you see it from 1,000 other sources.
You mean he's got an incredible reputation?
Oh,
see, here's what's interesting. Here's what's interesting is, and I think what we saw happening over the weekend is just playing into this. The GOP has come out last week and said they are going to run against the media in 18.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? That means that they don't believe they're going to have an actual accomplishment to be able to tout. They just have to go against the media.
Yeah.
And why would they do that? For a second reason, it's working. People perceive the media as the big bad boogeyman. Okay. Do they have problems? Yes. Do they have credibility? No, in many cases. In some, they do. But because it was Megyn Kelly, who the right wants to hate, and the left already does, she got pummeled from both sides, and we're not allowing ourselves to see the truth about Alex Jones. If you are on the right, you are giving him a pass because Megyn Kelly is persecuting him. If you are on the left, you don't know which one is worse, Megyn Kelly or Alex Jones. We have to decide what truth is. And there is truth. You can find it. And the best way to do it is just to say, okay, in the last 5,000 years, what has worked and what hasn't? What has worked? Well, a society where people say, I personally am not going to lie. I personally am not going to cheat. I personally am not going to steal. I personally am not going to covet. I personally am not going to mess around with somebody else's wife. I personally am not going to kill. Now, if you need somebody above you to say, a sky god with his boomstick to say, don't do those things, then that's good. If it stops you from doing those things. If you need nothing above you, you're just a really good person and you're not going to do any of those things, that's good. Okay, I'm fine with that. But if you think you need a government to be able to teach you not to lie, not to covet, I guarantee you it will fail. Why? Because of 5,000 years of history. Because the government covets, the government steals, the government lies, the government murders. Over 5,000 years, you have lots of evidence of that. We have to find truth again, and we have to pin ourselves and make ourselves morally responsible for that. Otherwise, things are going to continue to go the way they're going. And right now, five scary stock market predictions from smart investors. Stocks have been trading at near record highs, but not everyone is so certain that the acceleration will continue. This is crazy. This is the longest run-up we've ever had. What goes up always will come down. They are talking now that we're looking at a crash bigger than 2008. I'm going to send this story out today in our newsletter. I don't have time to read it today, but it's important. Jim Rogers says within 2 years, we're going to have the biggest stock market crash since the Great Depression. Bill Gross, all markets are increasingly at risk. Act responsibly right now. Call Goldline, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. They'll give you the historic truth. They'll show you what has happened in the past. And right now, for a limited time, Goldline is offering 1 year of price protection on orders of $25,000 or more. So if you take money from your 401k or your IRA, you move it into physical gold, you not only have possession of that, so it's not paper, but in a year, if the price of gold goes down, they make it up. That's unheard of. No way for you to lose money. Do it right now. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE. Read their important risk information. See all the details at goldline.com. 1-866-GOLDLINE.
Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment. And enlightenment. And enlightenment.
We are one.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
We have a question from the feed.
Was Charlie Sheen's hernia a hoax? Or was he playing devil's advocate, referring to our Alex Jones?
Well, audience. You know what? I've seen your hernia.
I think that was real. I think
at the time it was real, but now
I know. You never know.
He's just playing devil's advocate.
I want to take your phone calls towards the second half of the hour. Coming up in a few minutes, 888-727-BECK. I'd love to hear if you watched the Megyn Kelly thing. I know a lot of people didn't watch it because they're still so mad at Megyn Kelly.
I really don't understand.
Understand either, but you know, a lot of people are really mad at Megyn Kelly. Think she sold out, went to MSNBC or went to NBC. I think she did exactly the right thing. By the way, I think Bill O'Reilly is finding out the best thing that ever happened to him was leaving Fox News. He announced over the weekend he is, surprise, surprise, going to start his own newscast, and it will be. Available at BillO'Reilly.com. That's BillO'Reilly.com.
Man, whoever heard of something like that.
I know. I talked to Bill, and I was so afraid he was going to go back into it, and I kept saying to him, and I think this is why he sounds so happy.
He sure does.
He sounds really happy.
I mean, for Bill, he sounds happy.
Yes.
I think for a lot of Americans right now, he seems really happy. He's the most miserable man in the world.
Yeah.
He's like the Eeyore of broadcast professionals.
Yeah. And he is. He really is. he sounds so happy. And I said to him, this is early on. He was like, what am I going to do? I've got lots of options, but what am I going to do? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Bill, do none of them. Do none of them. What? Do none of them. Let me explain the power that you now have. No boss, zero boss, except your audience. Remain true to the audience, and you will never have to worry about it again. Oh, that's pretty tempting. Yes, yes. No one will ever tell you what to say, what not to say. You never called into somebody's office saying, well, this person is a friend of this person and that. Nope, you're your own boss. He's doing it, and I'm thrilled for him. BillO'Reilly.com. the world is changing big, big time. And he's not going to be the last to come out on his own. More in a second with Alex Jones, your phone calls, and so much more.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I want to take a few phone calls. 888-727-BECK, 888-727-BECK. Let's go to Carrie in South Carolina. Hello, Carrie. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, Glenn, gentlemen. Greetings from sunny South Carolina. I just wanted to say about education. Like, there is, I've been wondering when America was going to have enough. And I think that there's a homeschooling revolution going on. And there are, you know, parents who are all in for their kids and not looking to warehouse their kids, have had enough, and they are pulling out. Mm-hmm. And I will make a prediction that the kids are either going to be pushed out of the country, or they're going to be martyred, or they're going to be running things in 20 years because they know how to think. There's a generation coming up that knows how to think. They've been raised mostly by two-parent households because single moms can't stay home and homeschool their kids most of the time, and there is a revolution. It's here.
Well,
and it's really exciting.
It is, Carrie, and I agree with you. Thank you so much for your phone call. There's an old joke that, Pat, you remember this? I used to say this in the 90s. I completely agree with you, and you want to fight so hard for everybody gets a ribbon and a trophy. You are exactly right, because your kids have a very bright future. And my kids are going to need your kid to be on the other side of the speaker when they say, yes, an extra fries, please. It is. It's true. I mean, your kids are being dumbed down, and there is a revolution happening, an education revolution that is happening. Luke in Texas. Hello, Luke. You're on the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. If I cough, it's because of the heat and dust of El Paso.
Yeah.
Kind of kicking my tail. First off, Jeffy, stay strong. You're my boy. Glenn, listen to you for
just
years.
Just lost all credibility.
They're blabbing about something. Go ahead. Please, I'm trying to listen
Glenn,
to Luke.
Glenn, you said a lot of stuff today that I'd like to connect. But first off, I'm about to retire in 19 days from the Army. Done 20 years. And that, paired with what you said this morning, I think a lot of stuff is important. Talking about competition. So the Ghostbusters phrase you use about how the private sector expects results,
yeah.
I'm going to tie that into the military.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the pilots over the Euphrates, talking about losing the communications area. And after reading Dreamers and Deceivers, I think everything kind of ties together. So in the Army, I can only talk about the Army. When you go from staff sergeant to first class, that's E6, E7, the big Army has a board, and they say, hey, we're going to look at everybody, possibly 30,000 staff sergeants who are eligible, and we're going to pick some. So when you get picked up for that, you may be in the top 6%. Okay, so now you're in E7. Now you're looking for E8. And now you might be in the top 4% to get picked up. So I got selected for the Sergeant Major's Academy. My wife and I were going to retire instead, 2%. And so as this pyramid goes up, the Army is not dumb, and neither will the Marines or Navy and all them. They want the top. And everybody else that settles for mediocrity, if they never get promoted. So now I'm thinking about these pilots over the Euphrates. We want the people that are competitive. We want the people that cared about, you know, leading soldiers and combat missions and all that stuff. We don't want one of the 25 valedictorians from one of those states and schools you're talking about. We all want that. Dreamers and Deceivers. I love talking about Epcot Center and Disney. I love talking. Nobody on that Dreamers list was one of the 25 valedictorians.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And the last thing, your last caller there, talking about the homeschooling. So as I retire, we're taking our family to Indianapolis. Never lived there. It's in between my wife's folks and mine. But I've chosen to teach sixth grade math at a charter school. Mm. Never taught before, but I know that's what I want to do. So my five kids, we've been homeschooling, and we've decided if this charter school is good enough for me to teach, I'm going to take my three youngest and go there. And I am excited about the charter school and homeschooling experience. But if I had to wrap it all up, Glenn, I appreciate you letting me get the microphone on this. We want the competition. Those 25 valedictorians, those are 25 people that are going to put that on their resume for either a college or for a job, and they have no clue. They have absolutely no clue how watered down that is, and they're going to get a job somewhere, and they're going to expect them to perform, and they're going to fail, and then they're going to blame other people. There's my two cents.
Thank you very much, Luke, and thank you so much for your service to our country and to my family and all of our families for the last 20 years. I will tell you that I have more respect for the military, I think, than I ever have. Really knowing so many people now in the military, not that I ever thought that military people were dumb or anything like that, but the quality, maybe it's because the population is getting so stupid, that the quality of military people, the military people that we know, they are all so much smarter than almost everybody I know. Would you agree with that, Pat?
Definitely.
It's really remarkable.
It is.
How, you know.
You look at the guys we've had in here. I mean, they're just.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
As articulate as you can get.
Marcus and his brother.
Oh, yeah, a couple of killers.
Yeah. Yeah, his brother is a doctor now. Just went back. He's a doctor. I mean, these guys are just gigantic brains. And, you know, that's why we have the military that we have. That's why we have the protection that we do. Let me go to James in Tennessee. Hello, James. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Glenn. It's an honor to talk to you. I can maybe disprove your little statement. I got out of the military in 2001, not hearing anything about politics. And then September 11th happened, and I started tuning in to you and listened ever since. So I watched the Megyn Kelly interview yesterday.
Okay.
And I've had conflicting thoughts on, because I was listening to, in the Knoxville market, I'd listen to Glenn Beck from 9 to 12, and then from 1 or 12 to 3, it would be Alex Jones. And I did this throughout the 2016 election. So it was always tough for me to listen, but it was good. I got both perspectives.
Yeah.
And I have respect for both of you guys. I know he's a little bit more unhinged than you are, but y'all both have so much in common in that. You know, there's been many a times when you're on Fox News that you were just, according to, you know, the mainstream media, you were out there talking about, you know, the Middle East and, you know, the Arab Spring and all this, all these things that were going on that were truthful that the mainstream media didn't want to report on. And, you know, Alex is just a little bit further out there.
More than a little bit.
Well, when you get down to human fish hybrids, you're probably a little more than out there. But go ahead.
Well, I mean, you guys have some of the same interest in terms of, like, stopping, you know, child trafficking. He's also involved in that. And
I did a great job with that pizza restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, go ahead and make your point.
Okay. So a lot of that stuff was edited. And if you listen to Megyn Kelly, which he was smart in knowing that it was going to be a hit piece, you know, they taped everything she did so that they could have the other side of the story.
I know. Yeah, we never heard it.
Kelly totally sold him on it. I mean, everything that she said that she wasn't going to do, she did exactly what she said she didn't do.
I heard the tape, and I heard the tape that Alex says what you're now parroting here. I disagree with you. She said he would get a fair hearing, and the point he was trying to get across would be left in. She didn't say he would have a free reign of it by any stretch of the imagination. He shouldn't expect it, but. He made his points. He said, I didn't say that. I was only playing devil's advocate. He made all of his excuses for it.
I mean, you think it's okay that he took every side of the Sandy Hook issue? That's a good thing. It was a hoax, and then he was playing devil's advocate, and now it's actually none of it's true. So, I mean, how do you give any credibility to this guy?
Well, I disagree with him on Sandy Hook. But I do know that there were a lot of things out there. I mean, if you looked at, you know, some of the tapes, there's a lot on that thing that just had me very conflicted. And actually, one of my military friends was a special investigator in that. And so I've heard firsthand from his side of the story. So it's a real thing.
Are you a 9/11 truther?
No, I'm not a 9/11 truther.
Well, he is. So there's two things, two pretty damn big things that you disagree with him on.
Wait, what? The government knew more.
Our government had knowledge of what was coming and perhaps let it happen. That's the case.
Wow.
Well, that's a 9/11 truth. That is a 9/11 truther. I mean, the government knew that something was afoot, perhaps, yes, that they knew that airplanes were going to crash into the World Trade Center?
No.
That's crazy talk.
Not necessarily specifics. I just believe that our government doesn't always tell the truth.
Well, yeah, again, that's a far cry from the 9/11
overtly
truth.
That's a different standard.
Right? That's what we do. We follow we follow down to lower and lower hurdles to clear, and we all can clear that hurdle.
Yeah.
But the question is not, it's not the hurdle of whether the government always tells the truth. We all know that's true.
Do you also believe that virtually every Islamic terror strike is done by our government because they're false flags?
No, not at all. That's great.
Well, that's what he pushes.
Nor does Alex Jones.
I mean, day after day. Yes, he does. Day after, I've interviewed the guy for 2 hours at one point. He believes there's virtually no Islamic terror. It's all a false flag by the government so that they can perform whatever other power move they're trying to perform. It's all this governmental stuff.
Do you believe that in the Bohemian Grove that the elites, including Bill Clinton, the Bushes, et cetera, eat golden babies?
I don't know about the golden babies, but I know Bohemian Grove as well as other elite organizations definitely meet.
And well, there's another standard.
We asked you about golden babies, and you said meetings exist.
we agree that meetings exist.
People at the Elks Lodge meet, too.
but they don't eat golden babies.
Global
I don't mean to beat this guy. We appreciate you listening, for sure. And there's a lot of people who, like, because, you know, now, currently, Alex Jones is talking about a lot of things, you know, where he says he's small government. I mean, that was not when he was hanging out with Cynthia McKinney, who is a socialist and ran for president essentially as a socialist in one of these splinter parties. He was not saying these same things. The issue here is, and I'm amazed by the idea that, because people have said this before, you guys have similar ideas. I mean, Glenn, think about just 9/11 is a great example of this. We took that so seriously to the fact that you've gone to the part of writing a book called It Is About Islam. We've done thousands of hours of coverage about the real threats. You've gone deeper into the Islamic extremist threat than probably any other host on television. And yet this guy says it didn't happen with Islamic extremists. Now, that's just one incident. But as Pat has pointed out, shooting after shooting after shooting after shooting, he said, was not Islamic extremism. These are constantly false flags.
He also said that he was the guy who said that I was a CIA plant because no one has ever risen to the heights that I rose out of nowhere. I just appeared right the week of 9/11. I was the coordinator for the CIA to coordinate the coverage of the cover-up of 9/11.
And by the way, Popular Mechanics is essentially a division of the CIA.
Right.
Because they debunked all his nonsense on 9/11.
And I was part of that.
Yeah.
And this nonsense, he still says that this is an FBI, that The Blaze, that Mercury Studios is an FBI plant or... front, that there are FBI offices and CIA offices in my studio.
That's just a fact. That's just a fact.
Crazy talk. It's just crazy talk.
I can assure you that's not true.
I will tell you that there will, I will tell you, and I know this is going to offend James, our last caller, but it is true. You will agree with a lot of things that Satan says as well, because he will take a little bit of truth, and then he will take you into territories that you never thought, well, I don't agree with everything. He's not going to be completely false on everything, although he's starting to become that. And now this, it is summertime vacation for most, but scammers are hard at work. Your identity could be stolen today. Somebody's identity in the United States is stolen every 2 seconds. And it can be stolen in ways that you may not detect, especially if you only have the bank monitoring your credit. What does that do? Hey, your credit scores are getting bad. Okay. Thieves could sell your information on the dark web or get an online payday loan in your name. Now, LifeLock is different than just the monitoring of the credit. They detect a wide range of identity threats. If they detect your information being used, they'll send you an alert if there is a problem. A U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft. I mean, it happens every 2 seconds. But LifeLock is the best identity theft protection available. And the reason? They not only detect them, but if it slips through, they fix it.
memberships start at $9.99 a month plus the sales tax. LifeLock.com/Beck. 1-800-LIFELOCK. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com/Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
So glad that you are here today. Thank you so much. Bill Cosby, his defense lasted a total of 6 minutes, which is longer than, anyway, 6 minutes it was the whole defense, and then they rested. That's phenomenal. And hung jury. And they're speculating now whether or not he will come back for another trial, whether they'll try it again, whether they'll...
He said he would. I mean, prosecution's
already said that they're going to
retry it.
Yeah.
So
want to by the end of the summer.
He goes in and he's got another trial. Or it's the next judge. The hope that they've got to have is that the next judge will let more accusations in. That was the problem with this. There were only one or two accusers let in to say, yeah, he also did this to me. So if they open, the judge opens the door and there's the flood of women, then that's a different story. But this the case that's being tried is, what, 10 years old, 15 years old. So it's hard when you get that far away from the actual incident. And it makes people say, well, wait a minute, why didn't they say anything in the first place? Do we really know that this is true? You know, maybe some of those were true in old days, but is this one? We don't really know. And with Cosby, they expected him to make a long defense. And I think that played to the jury. I think the jury was like, look, the guy set up for 6 minutes. There was nothing to say here.
Good move.
Yeah, good move. Whether it will go to a jury trial a second time, we'll see. But as the boys pointed out, that's what they're saying. But again, we'll see what happens. Cosby acquitted over the weekend. We'll see you at 5 o'clock with a think tank. A lot to discuss, including a step up with a war with Russia.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.